Let's do this. Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Pad's going on today. So, like, Blaine Bishop came in the studio today. It was like electricity just bouncing off of him. I knew what it was because he was imagining putting it on those pads again and hitting everything that moves.
Yeah, you know, I really look forward to the pads because it was my style of play. It had nothing to do with hitting or anything else because I couldn't stand those players that look great in shorts. Oh, he looks like a specimen. Oh, he can run so fast. He's so tall. He's so athletic. Guess what? All goes to heck when you put on those pads, you start popping. All of a sudden, he doesn't look so athletic. He doesn't run so fast. Oh, he looks a little timid. Man, it like some guys just aren't the same guy with the pads on. When the pads start popping, and guess what? That's when I used to love to rise. I loved it because then now we are all the same here. I'm not the tallest. I'm not the most athletic. I'm not. Guess what? But I am a football player, and it requires pads and popping them. And so when I start popping, yes, I love it. I love it. Oh, I want to show you how fast I am. It was funny. My main man, the fastest Titan I ever played with, which, you know, not CJ because I didn't play during his era.
Right.
So was Chris Sanders. No question. He's the fastest player in my era. And maybe fastest in 100, probably fastest Titan in history, period. This guy was a, you know, track athlete all day long. Got some records there in college at Ohio State. And so he just put out this film of him at practice.
I saw it.
And I texted him.
He
didn't respond fast enough for me. I had to call him. I said, hey, man, where'd you get this? He said, yeah, I had to put that out there because, man, you don't understand. I would live to say, man, I want to see if I can get past Blaine Bishop. I said, well, guess what? You got to see a little bit of burst of me in my heyday. I said, what year was this? He said, 99. I said, yeah, and I was running with Chris Sanders. As much as you were looking at me like, oh, man, you're a great thing, I was looking at you like, hey, man, this is the fastest guy on the field. If I could show on tape I could run with this guy, there's nobody, and I mean nobody across the league, that I would be afraid of to run stride for stride there. Yeah, yeah. He was about to turn it on, and he said, I just saw you already had me.
Yeah. And it was like a thud-type practice, you could tell, because he catches it, and you – thud him.
Oh, how about this? We had on no pads, if you look at it closely.
Oh.
Yeah. And this is where I talk about those little habits I used to talk to Michael Griffin about, is I still went through and hit him with my chest to chest to his shoulder. Yep. As he was running sideways, that boom, this is how I'm engaging. And then I filtered off and waved off to the right and zoomed off. So I could still practice the habit and seeing my eyes run through the actual player. And that's why we had on no pads, by the way.
Oh, man.
I know I was stocky built in. Nah. But, yeah, I live for this. I mean, a lot of players, they do, just because then it gets real. And then especially for the offensive defensive linemen. So when you start popping who's winning where and what, it's, you know, it's distinguished now. I think more so for those guys in the trenches. So, yeah, man, it gets a lot of new energy, a lot of excitement, and then it dies down. That's why I'll be there tomorrow. Because I want to see how they respond to, see if their legs are a little weary. You see some people get tired. You know, I saw Molden get his feet all tangled up and got bulldozed by by the receiver there, Dez. Yeah. You know, oh, man. See, that my rookie year, that exact same thing happened. And just a different drill, but that happened. Guess the difference between me and him and this generation. I yelled, line back up, we're doing this again. Yeah, and the vets looked at me like, uh-oh. This dude is different.
Who was the receiver?
I don't know what to say. But you know, my rookie year, they had a lot of great receivers, but this one was more of a power. It wasn't Jeffries or Givens or Webster Slaughter. It was actually Curtis Duncan.
I remember Curtis Duncan.
Yeah, he's in a big-time accountant there in H-Town now. Yeah, really sharp guy. He went to Northwestern, really smart guy. And that's why it shocked me, because he, of all the receivers of the starters, he was probably the least talented, let's say that. But very productive. He started.
And that's not a shot at him, because the other guys were.
Haywood Jefferson, Ernest Givens, and Webster Slaughter were really good. Yeah, and he was really good, too, but in that running shoe. But a lot of people don't remember him. So, yeah, he ran me over. And he was looking at me like, well, I didn't try to do that, though. It doesn't matter. It happened. You ran me over. Yeah, so I'm sure Molden is gonna get him back at some point.
Oh, yeah. Well, we talk about getting God all the time. So
yeah, I didn't like getting God. Get God. So to stop getting God, you got to make sure you don't get God. And back to the Sanders. So when I would do something like that with Chris, I would say, you know, I would have knocked you out. And I would say it in a tone that was like, for real talk, like we in game. And he'd look at me like, ugh. So it was all part of the intimidation, even at practice, you know, practicing what you want, you know, your reputation and vibe to be to get in someone's head. And so that starts there, you know, starting to go and get your teammates. So always fun and gesture, never getting out of control. Nobody ever, maybe some pushing and shoving, but never getting some brawls like I think they had in New York, the Giants.
Hey, man.
Ooh.
The whole team fought. And then he went Herb Brooks in the movie Miracle and made them run, like, until their tongues fell out of their mouth.
Oh, who's the head coach?
Judge. The judge. The judge passed judgment on the Giants.
But I heard the quarterback was at the bottom of the pile, him and Logan Ryan.
Bottom of the pile.
What was going? The quarterback should never be part of any
quarterback brawl. Got hit. So Evan Engram hit the guy who hits quarterback. Then Logan Ryan apparently cleaned Evan Engram's clock. And then it just went on from there. And a quarterback, Jones, wound up on the bottom of the pile. So some Giants coach fished him out. And Joe Judge, they said, lost his bleeping mind and bleeped them. And, like, everybody leave the field but the players. And he stood out there and made them run sprints, do push-ups, run sprints, do push-ups.
Well, I heard the coach was out there running too, right? Some assistant coach?
I think he got pissed at everybody.
That was something yesterday. Our guy Brett Batchelor here, digital producer, told me yesterday issues with substitutions. He made the defense and defensive coaches get on the line and run.
Oh, man. That would have been a nice little jog walk for me as a coach if I was coach.
Joe Judge has already
to me, that shouldn't happen in this modern day of NFL, even in training camp. I know you lose your wits going against the same guy every day, but typically it goes to, you know, it's your teammates, your brother. It's your brothers. And so it's just like when you're getting in a fight with your own actual brother. And it should never, everybody should be always trying to pull people off. Don't let it get too out of control. Kind of let your frustrations get out. You push him, grab his face, man. But literally you stop and be like, okay, typically. Unless somebody does something to you egregious, you know. And to me that had to be like high, low and at practice on a, you know, you can't be high, low and guys at practice. So that's when I would say it could get egregious. But they used to get in some tussles and push, especially the guys on the trenches. But I try to stay as far as possible away from all that. And I looked at it a way I would take a knee, actually take my helmet off and say, oh, I can get some extra rest.
While these guys hammer each other in the helmet.
I jumped in one time, and I felt like I was exhausted.
Yeah.
It was just being part of pulling people off. It was just too exhausting. I said, I won't do that again. I'm new. I'm conserving energy, man. I remember watching Walter Payton getting up all slow every time, and then he would just run right through you. Yeah.
Yep. And so they say Jim Brown did the same thing, like get up real slow, then come and just run over you again. Get up real slow. Yeah.
I'm going to do with these big guys, these 6'5 guys. I can't help. I can't do anything besides like grab one of their legs and pull them and get them off balance on one leg. I said, dang, I make it hurt somebody that way, too. They're hopping on one leg, and then they may start stomping on the hitman.
Well, the hitman was smart to get himself out of that, because the other thing is this. Everybody's got a helmet on. Are you going to punch somebody in the helmet and break your hand? What's that going to prove? You're going to break your fingers hitting somebody in a helmeted head? Hmm. Yeah.
Hey, some guys, you know, but, you know, back in my early days, they were smart enough to yank the helmet off and then punch. I was like, dang, you strategically unbuckled his buckle? Yeah, when I yanked his head.
Well, sometimes the buckle didn't unbuckle. They just pulled the whole thing off. Yeah, yep. Ripped their nose off on the way. Yep. I'll say this. If you're ever at an NFL practice, and I know there's no fans there, normally there'd be fans there. The first time I ever went to training camp, and I got to go every day if I wanted to go. I just remember I would come back in, I'd be like, man, you should see this little, you know, it'd be some 5'9 receiver who is real fast. I tell you, he's caught everything. You'd be like, okay, what day do pads go on? I don't know. And I'd be like, because they brought in some vet one year, and he played 3 or 4 years, really fast guy, small, and I told you he was torching everybody. And you said, yeah, because nobody can touch him. Yeah. Let's just see how well he gets off the jam. And then when he can catch it and somebody can whack him, let's just see how well he did. And that guy didn't come close to making a team. I learned a valuable lesson that the pads come on. But when you're out there that day that the pads come on and everybody comes out for stretch, because usually, like, offensive guys are like, oh, yeah, we're going to get it today, something like that. Offensive guys don't say anything.
No, they don't.
And the defensive guys look like when you walk into school your senior year, how you feel, like, oh, yeah, it's all now.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's a level playing field now. Yeah.
The defensive guys come out for stretch that day. I remember Beyer, this was like year two for Beyer being out there, and, man, he was stretching. He had the biggest smile on his face. All those defensive guys. Logan Ryan, I remember him just, they were just so excited. It's just a different feel when the pads come on. All on the guys, and like if they're wearing blue, it's all the guys in the blue jerseys that day, the defenders.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a fun time because you can have contact, you know, and not being careful when you don't have on pads to run into somebody and accidentally bump them. And then, so now you get to collision them a little bit and then see if they can hang on to the football. You go for the ball, things of that nature. Just the fear. Woo! I'm right here.
Yep.
Oh, drop, fumble, you know, drop ball, incomplete. You know, so those things happen, and so, you know, the D line is pumped up. Then, you know, running back's not just running through the hole like it was a huge hole. Now he has to stop and keep churning. Then you got to let him go. Then you that's exhausting. I used to watch Eddie George do that stuff. I'm like, man, then he'd run all the way to the end zone.
Yeah.
And I just look at him and say, hey, man, that was a good job, man. You got some extra wind sprints in for you. We're gonna need you later. I was like, man, woo, that's a lot of work, a lot of resistance training. I felt like he had on a parachute the whole time. That's why he was great, though.
Mark asking on Twitter, there's always a Cinderella player, usually a wide receiver. Who's our dark horse for this year?
Ooh, at the receiver spot? I'm a big Chester Rogers guy. I don't know why he hasn't blossomed at other places. I remember watching him with the Colts.
Yeah.
And I really thought he was going to stick. He's a guy that can return kicks. He's a good third down, you know, receiver in the slot. Has good wiggle, good quickness. You know, he's a poor man's Derek Mason. I mean, Derek Mason was an elite, probably Hall of Fame player because and he has the dynamics that I like in receivers in that I like all receivers, whatever size you are, that are fast and quick and great route runners. And you don't have to be the fastest, but if you 4-5 and you run great routes and you have great hands, you can find a place in this league. And I think he can do that, and he can do multiple things. But he maybe the outside looking in, just maybe because he's a veteran, the salary. I don't know. But I really like his skill set. And I think he's a little different and has experience. So I feel like him and Bassing are going to go back and forth. Who's, you know, hung on here the last two or three years, whether he got injured or anything else.
He's got some
good skills, you know, skill sets. I just think Rodgers is a little bit better. Here's my whole thought process about this year's team. And that's why I keep harping on the kicker. Veteran Rodgers, if you're talking about this a Super Bowl caliber team, I want all men on deck with experience that knows what it's like, and they've already been there. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about the Super Bowl, but been there in a playoff game, been there in a clutch situation at the end of a regular season game, you know, all those things, and they keep everything calm instead of having that deer in the headlights, oh, this is my first go-round with it. I don't want that. I'd rather have the guy, the veteran guy, who may be a step slow, but he's now smarter and plays just the same as a younger player. Really, if you believe that, I think got to have a mixture of veterans with some young, talented players. In this instance, they have some veterans that are still pretty young and the leaders of this team.
If I had to pick somebody now, and he's not a receiver, it's running back, it's Darrington Evans. I watched him play a lot of football in college, being a Sun Belt guy. I watched him run all over my team for 4 years of that, unfortunately. But him fully healthy, full training camp, full everything, I think they'll use him.
I like that pick.
I think they'll use him all over the place.
Yeah, I actually love that pick. You know what? I don't want to cut you off, but I get excited. Last year when he was playing, remember he got a, like training camp hammy. You know, but he was practicing, stopping, you know, practice 2 days, stop. You know, so he never really got healthy. At the end of the season, you got to see his juice. Yep. And I'm talking about for real, get up and go and change the direction and burst and explosion. And I said, uh-oh, that's the guy that we drafted. Because we didn't see it till like the end of the season.
Right.
When he finally got healthy. And that shows you how a lingering hamstring and you're trying to fight through it. And you just don't know that middle of the road to keep it from getting worse to maintaining and being able to continue to play. So, yeah, he looked different at the end of the season. Him and Fulton looked really different last year at the end of the season. I'm looking for them to have some big breakouts from guys the last year's draft. Now they got a full OTAs and offseason.
Yeah, no doubt. This will be like two draft classes for the Titans this year because how little we saw of all those guys last year. We're going to draft somebody who knows the Colts in next. It's Blaine's old Ball State fellow chirp chirper, George Brimmer, who joins us next. He is covering the Colts, and boy, did they have a lot going on. You want to stick around, and you want to hear this. It's next on Blaine and Mickey. Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. We appreciate you hanging out with us. Remember, if you are a Zone TV person, Twitch, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, a.k.a. Periscope, jump on and join us anytime on there. Lonzo started the show today with good afternoon, fam. So we say good afternoon to Lonzo and to everybody who wants to join us. You can also catch the show anywhere where you consume all your favorite podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. And you come here because you want to know what's going on. And we all want to know what's going on with Indy. George Brimmer joins us now. We've had him on before. George with the Herald Bulletin. Also, I don't even know what this is, George, but it sounds amazing. CNHI sports editor. So for Indiana, this sounds like a pretty big title. I feel like you're very important.
Yeah, you know, I like to put the title out there. It does make it sound more important right now. It's just our newspapers in the state, our chain. So just one more job for me to do on a given day.
That sounded like a state nomination or something. I thought you were like the minister of sports for the state of Indiana. We'll just go with that. I mean, you got that Ball State education like Blaine, so anything's possible, right?
Absolutely.
All right, well, let's start with this. What the heck is going on over there with everybody's feet?
I do not know. This is starting to be an epidemic out here, I think. It's sort of insane. I mean, today when Frank Reich said that Quentin Nelson has the same injury that Carson Wentz, I thought yesterday was weird enough because Carson Wentz's injury apparently happened in high school. He's been walking around for 10 years with this bone fragment in his foot, and for whatever reason, Thursday afternoon is the moment it determined to pop out and cause this problem. And then, what, 2, 3, 4, 5 days later, I lose track of time now, Quentin Nelson ends up with a similar injury. It's a different situation. Apparently, Nelson was born with his. It's a developmental anomaly for him. But the end result is 5 to 12 weeks for both of them. The Colts are obviously hopeful that it's going to be closer to 5 than 12. But that's the difference between playing week one and missing the first 6 games of the regular season.
Man, George Brimmer joins us with the latest from the injury brigade up in Indy.
Well, George, you talk about foot, and naturally we are not doctors, but what is actually the injury? Have they given it a diagnosis, a name to it?
Yeah, in Carson's case, they didn't say specifically with Quentin other than saying that it was similar to what was going on with the quarterback. In Carson's case, apparently he broke his foot in high school. It was the left metatarsal, one of the metatarsals in his left foot, and it just a little fragment of the bone came off, and it embedded itself somewhere, you know, I don't know, in a muscle, in a tendon, in between bones, wherever. It was there, and he was dealing with it, but for whatever reason, it was in a place where it wasn't causing any trouble, and then the other day when he rolled out in practice, that bone fragment came free, and it caused all the pain. It caused all this trouble. When they went and they looked at the doctors, it was the one thing Frank Reich said, the one good thing about this whole situation was it was unanimous. All the doctors said the same thing. It's an old injury. Get the surgery now. Put it behind you. He could have played through it, but their issue there is it would be a thing where week one he's okay. If it comes back in week three, you got to get the surgery then, and you're looking at, you know, the better part of the season. Now, worst case scenario, misses 6 games. They really obviously don't want that to happen, but you'd still rather that happen than missing time in November and December.
Well, Dr. Bisher is about to break it all down for us here.
Let's hear it.
So this is just like if you have a knee fragment, you know, and it's floating around, all of a sudden gets stuck in the wrong area, and then now becomes irritating. Your knee swells up just a little bit, and just enough to knock you off, and you say, all right, we just want to go in there, clean that out, and then you should be fine. Is this more so that to his foot, or is it a little more extensive than that?
Yeah, my understanding is it's pretty close to that. I think there might be, and we don't have confirmation on this, but from talking with other doctors, there might be a tendon involved that they had to peel back to get the bone out. And then the 5 to 12 week period, there might need to be some healing of that tendon. But at some point early on in the recovery process, the idea is it will become a pain threshold situation. That's where the optimism is with both of these guys. Quentin Nelson, everybody knows his foot's attached. He's probably going to play week one. You don't worry about him. But with Carson Wentz, Frank Reich has been with him. He said he feels like he's the type of guy who will play through this. It won't be a problem. You just never know. I mean, everybody heals differently, and certainly this franchise doesn't need to be reminded that every situation is unique and fluid, and anything that can happen probably will.
Well, naturally, this is my last question about this part of it and the injury side of it, and that is, so no reference to a Liz Frank or a ligament injury at all to either one of the guys?
No, it sounds like that's the good news. You're not dealing with anything crazy like, you know, plantar fasciitis, none of that, no Liz Frank. It's a really freak thing, and the really odd circumstance about it is it's a rare injury. And it happens to two guys who are critical starters on the same team in less than a week of each other. It's been that kind of year so far here in Indy.
Yeah, we're with George Bremer, Indianapolis, Colts beat writer. And I guess that leads me on to, man, it seems like they have no veteran presence as a backup. Are they really loving Eason and the other guys, and how well are they doing?
Yeah, it's been a struggle lately. I mean, first of all, Eason's out there with no left side of the line. The starting center's been out. Ryan Kelly has a hyperextended elbow. He'll be back in a couple weeks. Obviously, Eric Fisher's going to be the left tackle, but they knew he was going to be out with the Achilles tendon rehab. So right now you've got backups from the center all the way out to the left side of the line. And you can see that the defensive line has been dominant throughout practice. Defense is probably usually ahead this time in camp anyway, but it's been very lopsided since Carson Wentz went out. I think my sense is that they really want to know what they have with Jacob Eason. I think the reason they didn't bring a veteran backup in to begin with is he got very little work, and I mean almost none last year. He was obviously a third-string quarterback, but the way training camp went, the way everything went with the COVID situation, he got about 4 snaps a game in team drills during camp, the 2 weeks that we saw. There were 2 practices they had at Lucas Oil Stadium where he got about 11 snaps. Prior to this camp, that was the most extensive work he had done. They only did 2 weeks of OTAs this spring, and it was walkthrough. It was no offense versus defense. So really, when he got into training camp, it's the first real look they had at him. And I think the plan always was to find out what you have. Now with Carson Wentz down, that's obviously being accelerated. There's the way that Frank Reich is talking, you've got about a 2 to 3 week window here where they should start to get an idea of how Wentz's rehab is going and start to understand, is it going to be closer to 5 or to 12 weeks? And I think they're waiting through that. That gets them through that first preseason game with the Panthers. I think they want to evaluate Eason, give him the first team reps, see what they've got, and then you can look, reevaluate once you know what's going on with your starter. I think at that point they might look to bring in a veteran.
What veterans do you think are on the punch list?
Yeah, you're going to hear Nick Foles' name again and again, and it sounds like he kind of made a cry for help yesterday. Yeah. That was one of the oddest. You know, I don't know if I've ever quite experienced that. But he'll come up because of his experience with Frank Reich, very similar to what they did with Rivers and with Wentz now. I think Blake Bortles is a name that you don't hear a lot of, but Scott Milanovich, who's here as the quarterback's coach, he was the offense coordinator with Jacksonville in 2017, which was Bortles' best year. I don't think you can, I'm always just trying to connect the dots. I don't think you can rule that one out.
Oh, okay. We're on with George Bremer, Indianapolis Colts beat writer.
So, George, it's funny you mentioned Foles and his essentially saying, I'm out here and I'm available and I'm better than I've ever. We're going to have to play this. It was absolutely amazing. A guy who's currently on one team openly campaigning to be on another team. So this morning, I'm watching one of these ESPN chat shows where they're all in a different box and they yell at each other, and they had a fight about the Colts, and half of them were fighting, saying, you can't bring in Nick Foles because it'll wreck Carson Wentz's confidence if you do that again. And others were saying, no, you do what it takes to carry the team to win games. If his confidence is that shattered and that low, then he's just got to move on with himself. Do you think Foles would be in play, or is the half of the ESPN studio yelling, "You can't do this to Wentz." Is there something to that?
You know, I think Blaine will probably agree with this. You know, you've got to worry about the 53 guys in the locker room. And I don't know how you look Darius Leonard in the face, how you look at Ryan Kelly, DeForest Buckner, any of the veterans in this room and tell them if Jacob Eason doesn't improve. And you know, I don't want to dump on Jacob Eason too much right now. He's only played 1 year in the last four, and he's struggling right now. But I think you would expect that for a guy in his circumstances. They're going to see what he does. He's got a little bit of time here. But if he continues to struggle – as he has now, and things look bad in that preseason game, I don't know how you look at the rest of the locker room and tell them because of one guy you're not going to make a move. I think if Foles is the fit that he obviously believes he is, if Frank Reich agrees with that line of thinking, you've got to do what's best for the team. You can't just put it on one guy in his mentality.
So the Colts receivers, I mean, we've all seen enough of T.Y. Hilton in our lifetimes to last us a lifetime. If he can't be the T.Y. of old, I'll ask you two parts. A, how is he looking? And B, all the young guys behind him, how are they looking?
Yeah, you know, T.Y.'s kind of taking it easy right now, I think, this point in training camp. He's a vet. He got a vet's day off today, and he knows the pace himself that first week, and they just put the pads on today for the first time. You know, I don't think he's made a couple plays because he's T.Y. Hilton, but I don't think he's got anywhere near yet to full throttle. He knows the drill. I think some of the young guys, Michael Pittman's probably been the best receiver in camp so far. I think that's a good sign for them. It's one of the things that they were hoping to see. The raw ability is there with him. You know, he had a really tough break last year with that compartment leg syndrome. That was a scary deal. It just set him back. And it happened right as he was starting to ascend. He got that compartment leg syndrome, and it was like he had to start over again. Then towards the end of the year, you could really start to see him stacking days together, stacking games together. And a playoff game against Buffalo, they really shaded the defense toward him, put Tre'Davious White on him the entire day. I think that was something that the Colts really took note of. And Pittman has looked strong and looks like he's going to have the kind of year for them that they hope. Beyond that, there's a lot of just kind of hope and prayer that Paris Campbell can stay healthy. Every time he's on the field, you see the talent, but he just keeps having freak injury after freak injury. So far, so good for him, but the way this camp is gone, it might just be a matter of time. And then Zach Pascal's been, I think he's the most untalked about guy in this receiving core, but every year he just exceeds expectations, went out today and scored two touchdowns in the red zone and looks like he's on pace as well. So it's a young group beyond T.Y. There's not a lot of production there, but I think there's a lot of excitement about what they can do this year.
George Brimmer joins us on the Mark Spain Real Estate Hotline with the Herald Bulletin, covers the Colts beat. He's also the Minister of Sports for the entire state of Indiana and a Ball State grad.
Yeah, no doubt, man. That's a great title there, man. I'm sure you're getting paid up to that title for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Naturally, we have to talk about Darius Leonard and where is he at, not only with his health, but maybe a new contract?
Yeah, I wonder right now if the two aren't a little bit tied together. Darius looks really pretty much fine out there. He's been out here every day. He's obviously not participating, but he's running on the side. He doesn't, you know, and easy for me to say it doesn't look like anything's hampering him when I don't have to do anything. But you know, from our point of view, it doesn't look like there's any, he doesn't look slow or, you know, he doesn't have a limp or anything like that. But I do wonder when you see these other guys, and this is just speculation on my part, when you see these other guys falling by the wayside and you know that a new deal is close, you know, if you're Darius Leonard, I couldn't blame him if he's saying, I'll be out there as soon as something's signed. I don't know that that's the case, but I think it would be a smart move on his part if it is.
Do you think he'll get more than the gentleman over at San Francisco, the 49ers, Warner, will get or got?
Yeah, I think that's probably part of what they're haggling on right now. The idea all the time was that he'd be the highest paid linebacker when he signed, interior linebacker when he signed. And I think that's where it's headed. I assume now it's probably what it normally is, bonuses and, you know, exact language of things. It sounds like they are close. It's just a matter of, you know, when that deal is going to finally come through. And I really think with Darius, I'm not worried about him. I think he's one of those guys, much like Quentin Nelson. Quentin will be ready to go. Whenever the doctor clears him, he'll be ready to go. He'll be Quentin Nelson. I think Leonard's the same way. He missed his entire rookie OTAs. He missed that entire spring. Came out his first practice and intercepted Andrew Luck. I think he's just one of those guys. It won't really matter. When they ring the bell, he'll be ready to go.
I saw Coach Reich, admit some with the COVID and the positive test. I think he's back now, but kind of take us through how it's impacting the team this season, or if it is at all.
Yeah, that's one of the oddest things. You know, you open up camp and the head coach is not just on the COVID list, but he's one of the rare breakthrough cases, breakthrough positives, and that should have been the story of camp, but now it's like fourth or fifth on the list just because of everything that's gone on in a week plus down here. I don't think it was good for him the first week. He was in the Zoom meetings and he was still talking with the team, but you could see yesterday when he came back, he had about it felt like 20 minutes. I don't know if it was quite that long, but he had a really long, especially for him, talk with the team after that first practice. And you really think about it was the first time he was in person with this group of guys, since the OTAs ended in late May. So, I think they have installed most of the offense. I think that's a plus. And they had scripts for most of the practices. But I don't think any team is going to be happy to not have – you have a head coach for a reason. You know, you want him out there. And for him to miss that first week and really to miss all the work so far that Carson Wentz did on the field – it's just another setback for this offense that's had plenty of adversity in about 6 days of camp so far.
All right, lastly for me, last question about the quarterback situation, and that is, with the schedule of the first five games, it looks really rough. Like, it's some tough teams to play. I mean, you could literally start off 0-5. When will the sense of urgency happen in here if Eason's not the guy that you start seeing the Colts, start looking around for quarterbacks?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a brutal opening stretch, and it was before Carson Wentz got injured. Right. Now you just look at the offense situation, and it becomes even more so. I really think that first preseason game with Carolina is sort of the turning point. That's the first checkpoint on this road. They can kind of get by for now, especially if it is going to be somebody like Nick Foles that they eventually bring in. He knows the offense. He wouldn't need as much time. And I also think they're putting a lot of trust right now in Frank Reich. He's done a good job everywhere he's been. Mm-hmm. At tailoring the offense to that quarterback strength. I think they feel like anybody they bring in later this preseason, they're going to have a better picture of who that guy is, a better understanding than they do of Jacob Eason right now, just because Eason hasn't had that chance, hasn't had those opportunities. So I think a lot of it is putting faith that Frank Reich will get whoever they need to go ready to go. But I think once you hit that first preseason game with Carolina, it's time to reevaluate everything you've got with Jacob Eason. You should have enough data on him at that point. Find out a good idea of where Carson Wentz is, and then you go from there. I know Chris Ballard, his entire time he's been here, his modus operandi is, don't panic, wait it out. I think, right now I think that's what you're seeing from him. He doesn't want to make a move until he knows for sure what he's got in Jacob Eason. Until right now, I don't think they've moved on to plan B. I think in their mind, it's still Carson Wentz in week one. And until that changes, they'll deal with it at that time.
Man, that's good stuff, George. People can follow you at GMBREMER for all the latest from Colts camp and all the latest that's happening there. We'll keep following you as well. Thanks, man. We appreciate the time today.
Appreciate it. Chirp, chirp.
No problem. Thanks a lot, guys. Chirp, chirp.
There you go. Two Ball State alums saying hey to each other. All right, Nick Foles, by the way, you want to react to any of this stuff, Mark Spain Real Estate Hotline, open 615-737-1045. What exactly did Nick Foles say? Remember, he's on another team. This is fantastic. We've got that for you next. It's Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone, back in the studio on Zone TV. Check us out on all your favorite platforms where you like to consume The Zone. You can consume us there. Consume Blaine and Mickey. Colts may need to consume a new quarterback. Really interesting. We just had George Brimmer on. If you missed it, if you're just joining us, you will want to catch that on the podcast page. He covers the Colts beat for the Herald Bulletin newspaper. And Blaine, he used the P word a lot, patience. Ballard, patient. It's going to be patient. Let's see how... How's Jacob Eason look?
Well, we didn't even ask about Sam Ehlinger either.
No. Just going to be patient, going to wait it out. I mean, you're talking to arguably the best guard in football. That dude's 3 years in the league, 3 years all pro.
He bad, man.
And I know they're saying, oh, he's going to – and George's like, oh, they'd have to rip his foot off for him not to play. Well, I don't know. I mean –
Well, what I can say, a lineman, you know, they can kind of be able to manage a little bit better through it if you're a skilled guy. So, you know, the pain tolerance is a lot higher for those guys too as well. And then they don't have to run as far. So even if he kind of took a shot, you know, and played just in a game and didn't practice all week, he could probably be able to manage. He may not look like the same player, but he still would be really good. The one thing that's concerning here from a Titans viewpoint is that they are very comfortable, even, you know, listening to all the reports, to kind of let this play out.
Yep.
And reason why I think that is, which is the opposite of what George just said, is they said their offensive line is, you know, the left side is no can do. Well, I was thinking that they're feeling comfortable because they got a great offensive line. They got a great defense. They can run the football. You don't have to have the big-time quarterback early in the season if you got, you know, protection and you can run the football. You're protecting the quarterback based off those things.
Yep.
And with a really good defense. So I was thinking they were at a comfortable place, but that doesn't sound, you know, very comfortable when your whole left side of your offensive line and now your quarterback are out. So, but Eason needs to get those reps, and that's what they're going to kind of play it out. And then he said Bortles, then I would assume, knows a little bit of the offense as well as Nick Foles. So there's some guys out there, too. I thought he was going to say even Phillip Rivers.
I did, too. There's odds from Vegas. There's like 10-1 odds that Phillip – it's either – Lucas can look this up. It's either 10 or 12 to 1 that Phillip Rivers will be their quarterback this year.
Yeah, to start it off, and you kind of, yeah, man, he gets some free salary, and then if they cut him or he can still be an advisor. I know he's a high school coach right now, but you don't ever pass up, you know, millions of dollars, you know, to me, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. You know, it's a matter of when he gets in based off his numbers, even though he never won a Super Bowl.
So I'll give you those odds. Our friends at Bet Online have sent us the odds of who will be the starting quarterback for the Colts week one. Some of these names you'll find very interesting. First of all, though, one of those guys who has some odds is Nick Foles. He actually has the second best odds. He plays for the Bears now, but this whole situation came up with Carson Wentz yesterday, and literally Nick Foles in his Bears gear, this is how he answered the question.
Just before we came in here, we learned that Carson's going to have surgery in Indy. So in terms of that familiarity, you're talking about comfort level. Is that a spot with Frank that you would be comfortable?
Listen, Frank Reich is one of my favorite, if not favorite, coaches of all time. He understands me as a player. He understands me as a person. But, you know, right, I haven't had any talks with him. I don't know. I'm a Chicago Bear right now. But I think if he knows me. He understands. I mean, y'all watched the 2017 season in the playoffs where he changed the offense and built it around me, and y'all saw what happened. So he understood my mentality as a player, and he was able to build it around me and put me in a successful position and my teammates. But that being said, they have Carson, and Carson and I have a lot of history. I have a lot of respect for Carson. He's a tremendous player. He's going through adversity once again, but he'll bounce back. And you know what? He might miss a few games, but I know he'll be back out there. But we haven't had any talks, so right now I'm a Chicago Bear, and I'm going to keep slinging it with these third stringers, and we're going to dice them up.
You've been involved with trade talks for another team. You said you want to be involved in that process. Has that occurred already yet?
There was a couple opportunities that came to be this offseason with a couple teams, but it wasn't the right time. It wasn't the right time or the situation with what was going on in my life. It's like I said, you don't just want to go somewhere to go somewhere. Like, you want to go somewhere where you know the people somewhat, or you know someone who knows the people that can vouch for the people so you can succeed. Listen, I'm 32. I feel great. The version of me right now is much better than the version that played in the Super Bowl. I'll tell you that. And I'm confident in that. So put that through your mind. I know that. I know what this game's about. You have to have the whole package as a team. Like, you have to have everyone in there. You have top down has to be great. If it's not great, you're going to be mediocre. I've seen it. I've been a part of it. And unfortunately, when you're a quarterback, you got to go through a lot of the, you know, baloney. But that's part of it. That's why we play this position. That's why we grow. Because at the end of the day, there might be some kid that's watching this press conference and they say, Nick Foles is a three quarterback, and he's going out there, and his mentality is to dice up that defense and help his teammates. And that's what I will continue to do till I lace up the cleats for the last time.
Nick Foles is like the GIF of the guy in the tracksuit who just walks in the room like, uh-huh, uh-huh. Hey, man. I mean, there were some other opportunities that came up, but, you know, they weren't the right ones. You know, he did everything but say, here's my phone number, Frank Reich, if you'd like to go ahead and call me. And even the Carson stuff, like, I know Carson's going to be fine. I mean, sure, he's going to miss a few games. I mean, Carson is a great guy, but, I mean, he's used to facing adversity. I mean, he played that just perfectly in every way. The only thing missing was him holding up like a sign just saying, I am available, while he was saying all those words. Or like, Colts, please call me.
Right. It should have just said, Colts, call me. Right. Because I'm begging for you to get me out of here right now.
That's it. Please.
He's a third-string quarterback that is only making, you know, in NFL term, $4 million for a third-string. They have Andy Dalton as well as the Fields kid that from Ohio State. So
right.
It's interesting, though. They may hang on to him because he was there and he knows the offense, and they may keep him as a third stringer, maybe just put him, you know, for the COVID situation away right. from everybody.
See? Right.
So they may not even let it happen. And if it does, you know, what is his trade value? What do you get for him? Or do you wait to see if they cut him? Or do you just play it on out and then got other options? And as, you know, Greg Bremer said, you know, as, or George Bremer said that, you know, you got Bortles. I like that option. I like Bortles over Nick Foles because I feel like Nick Foles knows the offense too well.
Yeah.
I think Bortles, he'll still throw you a few. Yeah, I still believe that. He got a big arm, but he will still throw you a few.
I think the Colts are daring the Bears to cut him.
Yeah.
Like, hey, man, it's three games in the preseason. He knows the offense. He come week one, we stick his butt out there.
Yep. You just got to get the timing with the receivers and the offense and the cadence.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I bet they're daring the Bears to cut. He's number three. They're daring him to get cut for what he makes.
Yeah, for me, yeah.
They're daring the Bears to cut. Okay, yeah, Brian, we're just going to ride with our guy, Eason. Yeah. Put in a Wildcat for Ellinger. Let him run in the line a couple times. Here are the odds, bet online, for the Colts starting quarterback. Jacob Eason is number one. His odds are 4-5. Nick Foles, 3-1. He's the second option. Brett Hundley, who's another one of their backups, who was the Packers briefly, 5-1. Sam Ellinger, I don't know if he's Ellinger or Ellinger. I think I've said it both and heard it said both ways. He's 11-2, no matter how you say it. Mariota, 6-1.
Ooh.
Yep, jumping in there. Phillip Rivers, 10-1. And Cam Newton and Jimmy Garoppolo are each 12-1.
Ooh.
Yeah. Like, Newton lose out to the Rook up in New England. Okay. Or Garoppolo lose out. Okay, just trade for one of those guys.
See, that's what is astonishing to me about Vegas with those two curveballs there at the end for me. Because as much as I don't think Cam's going to be the guy the full entire season, I think he's going to start off the season as the starter. And Garoppolo, I think if I'm Lynch and crew there, I would probably let it play itself out because Garoppolo does a solid job and see if he gets injured again. It's 2 years in a row he got injured.
Yep.
Then, you know, in the Super Bowl, he just missed a couple throws that he should have made. And so do you want to turn it over to the youngster sooner than later? And then who's your backup? Do you have another three guy that you feel like can be a part of his equation? I think I was watching their practices. I forgot who their number three is, but he's pretty good. Pretty good. I forgot his name. But, yeah, so I think they'll be all right. But for whatever reason, I just think they're not going to trade Garoppolo.
On that note, Trey Lance was taking reps with the first team offensive line and making some pretty good throws today at training camp, according to reports.
Why would you have the charade like the Jaguars or like Carson or Gardner Minshew came out the first day and took like the first team reps? What are we doing?
That says Garoppolo's out then.
Yeah.
If he's doing reps already, they just started practicing. I mean, 5 days in.
Yeah. Well, they're saying he's for sale.
Yeah.
Rhett Bryan looking in the window. He's been at practice today. Hour number two coming up with us. Maybe let's run Rhett in here. We'll get some observations with him to start hour number two. And then we'll hear from Coach Mack at around 2:20. It's Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone.